The preceding broadcast was recorded over the Remembrance Day weekend.
I feel that I am speaking to friends and companions.
Mick the Brit here with a broadcast recorded over the Remembrance Day weekend. And starting with our tribute commemorating the 100th anniversary of Armistice Day that was supposed to end all wars. You might remember me back in September telling you after my return from France and Belgium, a trip that we made, myself and my immediate family, it was 16 of us, on a minibus as we went to visit the grave of my great-grandfather, George Sims. 681148. He was a member of the 1st 22nd Battalion Queen's London Regiment. He died the 2nd of September 1918. The 1st 22nd Battalion Queen's, the London Regiment, were a territorial unit with their HQ at 2 Jamaica Road, Bermondsey, serving as part of the 6th London Brigade, 2nd London Division, in 1914. The division had just arrived for their annual summer camp on Salisbury Plain when war broke out in August 1914. They were at once recalled to their home base and mobilised for war service. The division concentrated in the St Albans area for training and left for France on the 16th of March 1915, arriving in Le Havre. Concentrating around Bethune by the 22nd of March, the division was the second complete territorial division to arrive in France. The 5th London Brigade were ordered to Cassel, and the remainder of the division concentrated near Bethune and were rejoined by the 5th Brigade near the end of the month. In May 1915, the 142nd Brigade and 2nd London Division, they saw action at, in 1915, Battle of Auberge Ridge, Battle of Festubert, Battle of Loos. In 1916, they saw action at Vimy Ridge, the Battle of the Somme, the Battle of Fleurs-Coussillettes, which is known as High Wood, the Battle of Transioy Ridges, and the Battle of Wellancourt. In 1917, they saw action at the Battle of Messines, 3rd Ypres, and the Cambrai Offensive. In 1918, on the 1st of February 1918, they were transferred to the 140th Brigade. They saw action on the Somme and the final advance on Artois, including the entry into Lille. After the armistice, they returned to Bethune, where demobilisation started, and the first of the troops eventually returned to England in January 1918. It's at Peron Communal Cemetery is where my great-grandfather is buried. And on the 100th anniversary of when he died in action, we laid wreaths and flowers at his graveside.
We've a lot to be proud of in our great nation, from language and history to science and education. But what pulls great in Britain for me is folk what live here, like me and thee. A tiny island nation stuck in North Atlantic. We punch above us weight as though we're gigantic. And the reason we've been at top for some time is them that serve country and made sacrifice. Your soldiers, your sailors, your airmen and all. Millions of it years have answered the call to say goodbye to fathers and mothers and serve alongside new sisters and brothers. So shave your ears and send it to sea. Or give thee a rifle and dress you up like a tree. That's been way for many generation. I'd love to say why, it's no but imagination. But for many, it's not. It's as real as can be for them that's fought for us to be free. I'm lucky to have known many a great man that served in Falklands, Iraq and Afghan. I've always been proud to have them as mates, knowing what they've did that can't be replaced. And I'm not just talking about them with us today. There's many that's fought that we've lost on way. We have this time, at start of November, we set aside every year for us to remember. Them that's fought, fought country and wild, and laid down their lives so as we can live ours. Too many have given that great sacrifice. Too many have paid the ultimate price. But many of them that still remain will gather in London for a remembrance parade. As tales are shared, there's laughter and tears, and crowds and art to remember every year. I get a lump in my throat, a feeling of awe, watching great generation, what fought in world wars. Seeing blokes in the 90s that can barely work, but on Remembrance Sunday, will get up and they'll march. Chins iron proud and chests puffed out, with a row full of medals dressed immaculately smart. Whole nation drops silent as last post rings true. We remember the fallen and give thanks to them too. Aussies and Kiwis and Yanks and Fijians, Canadians and Gurkhas, lads from Caribbean, Indians and Africans, the list goes on. Have all give their lives, don't matter where they're from. We wear a poppy and we wear it with pride as a symbol of remembrance for them that's died. When parade's done and dusted and wreaths are laid, I know for myself the memories don't fade. I'm forever grateful to brave women and men that's chosen to save others instead of the same. To them that we've lost, I'm forever in debt, but I promise you something I'll never forget.
They shall grow not old, as we who are left grow old. Age shall not weary them, nor the years condemn. At the going down of the sun, and in the morning, we will remember them.
Songs of joy and stuff. show me how to play. The pipes of bees. Play the pipes of bees. What do you say? Save this planet we're playing on.
Is it the only one?
What are we gonna do?
Help them to see
that the people here are like you and me. Let us show them how to play. The vibes of bees.
Play the vibes of bees.
Paul McCartney, Pipes of Peace, and you might remember the video for that, where it was a recreation, an interpretation of Christmas Day at Meissen, where the Allied forces and the Germans had a game of football. In fact, there is a memorial there of that there in Meissen.
The Mick the Brit broadcast.
Whatever your taste, whatever your interests, there will be something for you in our programmes.
We'll be right back.
for Flaming Lips and Race for the Prize.
The Mick the Brit Podcast. Radio Bits with Mick the Brit.
Well, there is an article that appeared on Thursday on Bloomberg.com with the headline, Save the Climate, Eat Less Red Meat. Now, what have I been saying for the last umpteen months, actually probably over a year, that we have seen now this movement to encourage the world to go vegan, stop eating meat by using climate change as their front. That's their whole tactic, saying, well, we have to, because when you look at what one food product takes the most global resources and global warming, and with cows, with their flatulence, causes methane gas, which erodes at the ozone, we got to stop eating meat. We got to stop eating pork, eating red meat, eating any sort of animal product. And here's the, I'm going to give you some excerpts from this opinion piece by Jessica Fenzo. The way we eat is going to have to change. That is, if we are to preserve a livable climate on Earth. A new international study makes this clear. Over the next three decades, the food system's impact on the environment stands to at least double if humanity carries on eating the way it does now. The negative effects include pollution and species loss. Wait a minute. We got plenty of cows. We keep breeding more and more cows and pigs. There's no problem with species loss. Cows aren't going away. So there is factual point error number one in this article. She goes on to say the greatest threat by far is posed by greenhouse gas emissions from growing, processing, packaging, and transporting food. More than two-thirds of those food-related emissions come from meat production, according to 23 researchers involved in a study led by Oxford University. Hence their critical recommendation, consumers, especially those living in certain high-income countries where meat is a significant part of the daily diet, are going to have to cut back and adopt a more plant-based flexitarian diet. I say, screw that. Not going to happen. Here's the reality. If you eliminated every single cow on the planet, that's going to not lead to a lick of one iota in terms of climate change difference. And as I've said before, why is it that the enemies of meat, why is it that the supposed climate changers, we hear about the climate change deniers, I'm calling it the climate changers, why do they keep stating, the science is settled, we have to cut off debate? What did I just say a few minutes ago? When they can't win on the facts, they go to close the argument. No, I can't argue with you anymore. It's done. What do we hear all the time from these climate changers? Oh, the science is settled. It's done. All these scientists already agree. We don't need any more debate. You are the one that is wrong because everybody else says it's right. Well, I remind every one of those climate changers that there was a time when the entire Earth, or all the population on the Earth believed the Earth was flat and not round. And there was a minority of people that said, no, the Earth is round. And there was the majority that said, nope, the Earth is flat. You're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. And if they were alive today, they'd say the science is settled. That's it. Every scientist agrees. Overwhelming majority of scientists agree. The Earth is flat. End of discussion. We can't argue anymore. That's it. We have to do something. So the reality is, whenever these people, these enemies of meat, or these pro-veganites, whenever these pro-veganites say, we have to eliminate eating red meat and you have to change your diet, what business is it of theirs? They just don't like the fact that we like eating meat and chicken. So they create this false mantra that, oh, we have to save the planet with all the climate change going on. It is nonsense. Cows have been on this planet for thousands of years. Nothing is going to change if you add or reduce the cattle population. And that brings me to the next story. And this is why I want to bring in Mick the Brit, colonel in charge of the European Theater of Operations, based in a classified location somewhere in the London Ford Theater of Operations. Mick the Brit, are you there?
Indeed I am. And
this is London calling.
There you go, sir.
Good sound effect, Mick. Very good. London calling. Sterling, Mick. Sterling, as you would say.
Indeed.
Mick.
Yes, sir.
A report in The Guardian.
Ugh.
Headline.
Yes.
A third of Britons have stopped or reduced eating meat according to a report. And the story says 1 in 8 Brits are now vegetarian or vegan, according to a report on food shopping that underlines a revolution in the UK's eating habits. A further 21% claim to be flexitarian, where a largely vegetable-based diet is supplemented occasionally with meat. Actually, I'm 100% meatitarian.
Me too.
I believe in eating more meat.
Indeed, General. Me too. I'm definitely a bona fide meatitarian. When they say a flexitarian, General, you're actually one of those. Because, you know, sometimes you have a salad instead of meat. Well, guess what? That's when you've cut down on your meat.
No. But that is not a... No. A flexitarian is be considered where they eat a largely vegetable-based diet, where it's supplemented occasionally with meat. I enjoy my vegetables. I enjoy my salads. But I'm not a flexitarian. I am a carnivore. Now, that means a third of UK consumers have deliberately reduced the amount of meat they eat or removed it from their diet entirely. And again, what's the one excuse that people are pointing to? The debate over countering climate change, saying that avoiding meat and dairy products is the single best way consumers can reduce their environmental impact on the planet. Now, again, it's not just meat. They're going after dairy products, okay? They're going after cheese. They're going after milk because why? Cows are involved in the production of milk. The number of vegans in the UK who shun all animal products, including dairy and eggs, has grown fourfold in the past 4 years, from 150,000 to 600,000, according to the Vegan Society. Can you imagine, Mick, what do you think the Vegan Society, a meeting of the Vegan Society, is like? First of all, every vegan I've ever seen that's 100% vegan, they look deathly ill. They have no color whatsoever. They look ashen color. They're drawn out. They look bony. They look like they're, about to croak at any second.
Yeah, they should have been trick-or-treating last night.
Yeah, trick-or-treat for steak, please.
Yeah.
Trick-or-treat for a Big Mac. Here's another fact, Mick, real quickly. 60% of vegans and 40% of vegetarians surveyed said they had adopted the lifestyle over the past 5 years. 55% citing animal welfare concerns, 45% health reasons, 38% environmental issues. People in the 18 to 34 age group were more likely to switch to veganism, with much less enthusiasm among over 55s.
Hmm.
But the vegan and vegetarian respondents said they did miss bacon sandwiches and pork scratchings. Yeah. What is a pork scratching, Mick? Please tell me.
General, it's kind of like a potato chip, but it's deep fried with pork.
The fat of pork. So it's a pork rind.
Oh, yes, it's a pork rind. Yes, of course, yeah. And I eat a bag of those.
A pork rind?
No, a pork rind. General, look, it's as simple as fat. The body needs fat. You can run on carbs, you can run on fat. But I'm telling you, if you run on fat, that you will lose weight. You know, the guy that said breakfast is the most important meal of the day, guess what? That was Mr. Kellogg's. And guess what?
That's correct. Cereal guys. And by the way, when you look at cereal, even like Raisin Bran, you think, okay, Raisin Bran is going to be healthy.
No.
You look at the sugar content that's in there and the sodium content, you are better off to have 6 eggs than you are a bowl of cereal or a half a bowl of cereal.
Yes.
No doubt about it.
And people are cottoning on to this now, General, and this is the repercussions of this. You have to follow the money, as you always say. You know, the sugar lobby is very big. And of course, there's more profit to be made from food that's got label on it than hasn't got labels on it. That's a fact.
Now, Mick.
Yes.
We know that Brits love their meat. Now, their steak isn't as good as the meat here in the U.S., Mick.
No,
gotta tell you.
I agree with that, General, 100%, yes.
Little tough. But when you look at many of the British staples, go ahead and give us like bangers and mash.
That's right.
That's sausage.
Yeah, it would be. Yeah, exactly. It's sausage and mashed potato. The British staple would really, and the Irish to some effect, would be meat and 2 veg. So you'd have meat every day with 2 vegetables, whether it be potatoes or cabbage, greens, whatever. But, yeah, the British staple would be definitely meat and 2 veg.
Shepherd's pie. Is shepherd's pie as big in Britain as it is in Ireland?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, there's a lot.
Shepherd's pie,
yeah.
Right. And let's even take it to fish. Fish and chips. True vegans don't eat fish.
That's right. They don't. But they might wear leather shoes or use leather handbags.
Right. So on one hand, a good point there, Mick. Right. On one hand, oh, no, I don't eat this or that. But yet, you hit it. Leather shoes, leather belt, leather wallet, leather, you know, leather products out the yin-yang.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. So, Mick, tell me, have you seen anybody? You are in the European Theater of Operations. You run the Intel operation. Have you noticed an uptick in the number of vegans and vegetarians in the people that you come across?
No, not really. There's one or two vegetarian-type restaurants, shall we say. But remember, I live in a very cosmopolitan city like New York, for example. So, yes, there's one or two new nouveau riche-type restaurants popping up. But there's also a plethora of burger, real burger restaurants type of thing. So, yeah, Five Guys, there's the Real Burger. There's all sorts of burger and
steak
places.
Five Guys is horrible. That's not real burgers.
Is it not?
Nah, I don't care for their burgers. By the way, Mick, Pendragon's Royal Baron. Baron, who's now 7 months old, who's about 87 pounds, he's taller than you are. No bull. I kid you not. He's taller than you are. All right.
The Mick the Brit Podcast.
She came from Greece, she had a thirst for knowledge. She studied sculpture at St. Martin's College. That's where I caught her eye. Was loaded. I said, in that case, I'll have room with Coca-Cola. She said, fine. And then in 30 seconds time, she said, I wanna live like common people. I wanna do whatever common people do. Wanna sleep with common people. I wanna sleep with common people like you. What else could I do? I said, oh, I'll see what I can do. I took her to a supermarket. I don't know why, but I just started somewhere. So it started there. I said, pretend you got no money. And she just laughed and said, oh, you're so funny. I said, yeah. I can't see anyone else smiling. Are you sure? You wanna live like common people. You wanna see whatever common people see. Wanna sleep with common people. You wanna sleep with common people like me. But she didn't understand. She just smiled and held my hand. It's all such a laugh. Yeah. And they
Chips, days of grace will come out in the bath. You will never understand how it feels to live your life with no meaning or control and with nowhere left to go. You are amazed that they exist and they burn so bright whilst you can only wonder why. Or rent a flat above a shop.
Pulp and Common People. I'm out on the road working, sort of early morning in the city, and you know that box thing on London Wall, it's west of Moorgate. They've got like this grey shed box shed thing for the construction workers on London Wall in the the right lane, and it's been there for bloody ages, probably a year or more. So I'm thinking, why is it there? What is the point of it? And I put that out on Twitter, and somebody got back to me and said, yeah, you're right, I've complained to the City of London about that, and they tell me that actually something to do with Crossrail. When the lorries come in, it's when they make deliveries. So I said, well, they'd probably be better off parking it near Finsbury Square, wouldn't they? I mean, it's about the same distance what it is from London Wall here as what it is from if there was to park it on Finsbury Square down to the Moorgate station where the Crossrail thing is as well. Today, I'm out, and this morning I noticed it's gone. That box thing has gone. So I think it's possible that they've forgotten about it. That's the only assumption I can make. And my tweets have been, they've been looked at and actioned upon, because they thought, yeah, he's right. It has been there for a long time. No one seems to be using it. But like I say, this morning, the 6th of November, 8 o'clock, 8 a.m. in the morning, it's gone. After years. Just goes to show, doesn't it, eh? Phew. Just heading south past Crystal Palace, November the 5th, and their annual firework display is in progress. All that ordnance you can hear there is the annual Crystal Palace firework display. Fantastic.
years ago.
Okay.
Years ago, I was working in the middle of the week, Tuesday or Wednesday night. Done a job down at Battersea, dropped off. It's all gone a bit quiet, put me light on. And I'm heading back, and I'm thinking I'll just get on the rank at Victoria, head back that way, see what happens. Anyway, I'm coming along Lucas Street, and there's no one around, except this little old lady flagging me down, so I pull over, and she comes up to the window, and she said, just go round to Belgrave Road, please. I said, that's no problem, madam. And she said, we're just waiting for my husband. I said, okay. Anyway, she opened the back door, and then she came back to the window, and she said, can you help me get in? I said, of course I can. So I jumped out, because I'm a helpful chap, helped her get in, shut the door. Anyway, I'm looking round, there's no one about. I said, I can't see your husband anywhere. She said, no, you won't be able to see him. I said, why is that? She said, because he's invisible. I thought, oh, right, okay. All right. I said, shall we go then, my dear? And she said, okay. So I shut the door,
jumped in,
shot up the road, turned left, up Belgrave Road. She said, just here. I pull up. Anyway, I jump out, open the door for her, helping her get out. And she went, oh, thank you. She said, now, how much is that? So I looked through at the meter. I said, oh, it's £3.60, please, Miller. So she's got nothing in her hand, and she's offering it to me. I've got my hand out for her, so she's offering me, and there's nothing in her hand. She's going, there we are, driver.
There we are.
So I thought, exactly what I'd expect, something like that was going to happen. But I like a bit of a joke, and I thought, she's not going to get away entirely scot-free. So I said to her, put your hand out. So she put her hand out, and then I start going like this with my hand, offering something back to her like that. And she goes, what are you doing? And I'm laughing to myself inside. I said, I'm giving you your change, right? And with that, she's gone, don't worry, you've been so nice, you can keep it.
I thought you was going to do the old one when it was many years ago, when we used to get extras. So, you know, and the fare comes to, I don't know, £8.60, and she says, what's the 60 for over there? And you turn around and says, well, that's for the extra passenger.
Yeah.
You got anything for us?
I've never had any invisible customers.
No invisible customer.
No.
Awkward, funny, weird.
Yes.
What's the last weird one you can remember?
I've had one from Victoria. He's talking about Victoria.
Yeah, it's a cesspool for nutters.
So, three of them, and they're holding up their mate in the middle. And I was a butter boy.
Yeah.
Okay, so they put him in, and then they've come to the window. Would you take this guy to New Malden? How much will it be? So I said, well, in those days it was, 25 quid to New Malden? They've given me £30. They've given me the address. Make sure he's all right, he won't be sick.
Well,
he's in the cab now, what can I do?
That's right.
So,
what are you going to do?
I get him round Cheney Walk way, and he suddenly wakes up. And he says, oh, my girlfriend lives there. And he bolts out the cab. He said, he sees that there's like £2 on the meter or whatever it was in those days. He's giving me the £2.50. And off he's gone to his girlfriend's. And that's my little story.
Touch.
That I can remember.
Thanks.
Mick the Brit podcast.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. And people in the street singing songs and they're carrying signs, mostly saying hooray for our side. It's time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. We better stop now, what's that sound?
Buffalo Springfield, for what it's worth.
It's the great news, the green light that every cab driver's been waiting for, that thought would never come, and some probably hoped would never come. And that's the fact that the cab trade, through the United Trade Action Group, and I'll get to that in a minute, has finally got the green light for a judicial review into the Uber decision that we all knew and felt stunk to high heaven. And yeah, the judicial review is going ahead and all done. And I'll take my hat off to those all concerned. I've spoke to Trevor since. And again, I mean, every cab driver should be absolutely over the moon that we seem to be turning it around a bit. One swallow don't make a summer. But I think the fact that this court case has now been allowed to have a judicial review, the United Trade Action Group going forward about applying for hire and everything, which again, listen, me and you and every cab driver watching this video, since Uber come in and demonised the whole trade and the industry in London, it's not going away. Yeah, I am doing that. I'll get to that in a minute. We've been absolutely demonised, right? And we all know, and it's about the money that Uber's got and the friends that they've bought in government, whether it's Osborne, Boris, Cameron, Theresa May, the appeaser, all that lot. We know the Tories are rotten, yeah? We just know it. That's a given. And also the mainstream media, who a lot of the people that own the newspapers have invested in Uber. So we was never going to get a real fair share of the dice rolling in our favour. But I think we are now. And again, it's so important that you drivers, especially the apathetic ones, actually do something instead of always thinking, ah, let them lot do it all. And when I say them lot, I mean the orcs, all of us, right? After trading nothing, which is pathetic anyway, and the other half, in the LTDA, that's their wish. I spoke to Trevor today, and it seems that, from what he's told me, seems that the LTDA are not going to get behind UTAG. Not going to put any money into it. But they're fully supporting the Michigan case that cost them nothing. Yeah, I've signed up to the Michigan case, and I've also signed up to the UTAG. I think every cab driver should sign up to the UTAG. Trevor Sandy needs 7,000. Thank you. Trevor needs 7,000 cab drivers only. But I think, what do you think about these demos by the ITVA? Well, I'll put that out on Twitter. I'll be attending, and I've said to all my... Hold on, I'm in the office, you can tell with that, can't you? Whoever's phoning up saying, I'm going to leave the club, I've been phoning, and they never pick the phone up. But, yeah, we'll be attending the demos, because the guy that had the TX4 smashed to bits, the window screen... he's one of our members, and Tony Casey, who's also one of our members, has been in contact with the police for absolute weeks, and you know what, they're not bothered. One of the guys who had their cab smashed phoned the police up, and he said, we got no police to send, yeah, we just got no one. So, you know, again, no one's listening. So what do? Go into a room and shout, yeah? Or do something. You know, we're living in lawless London. And I've seen people on Twitter say, let's go up there and smash them. Well, you go up there and there's a ruckus, I tell you, you'll be losing their job and it won't be them. You know, we're not coppers. We're not police officers. Yeah? And let them do their job and we do our job. We're asking them to just uphold the law and be a policeman, go up there and nick these people, yeah? There's enough evidence out there, pictures and the like. So, come on, up your game, cossers, yeah? If the LTDA don't take action against TFL or anyone, then in effect the trade don't take action, because they got the largest membership, they got millions in the bank, so it really, you know, falls on their shoulders. And again, as I spoke to Trevor, I had brief discussions about stuff, and it has been brought up at meetings about why the LTDA never JR'd the case regarding the meter. And if they don't come on board with the UTAG meeting and put some money in and get behind it, then maybe the members have got to wonder why and ask them why. And, you know, if you're happy with that, then, yeah, you're happy with it. But we're not. And my members certainly ain't happy with TFL. So choose your bedfellows very carefully, gents. That's all I'll have to say on that. What do you want? Do you want a job in the future? Or do you want legal cover? It's up to you, isn't it? You know, I get so many, when I'm handing the badge out, I get so many with the orange diary in the front, take the badge, and I say, careful, if you get seen reading that, you get slung out for misdemeanours. And some of them even go, really? How will he know I'm reading it? I'm like, So, you know, you take your money and take your choice, right? But at this moment in time, we all know our enemies, right? TFL, they give Uber the license. Uber didn't just come in and give themselves their own license, right? And like you might have seen on Twitter, the last meeting I had with Mike Brown, he actually said that he was going to support the trade having access in bank. And then it comes out that he wrote to the City of London supporting their decision to ban us. So, you know, Mike Brown does for the cab trade what the Boston Strangler done for door-to-door salesman, yeah? Killed it. So drivers, you've got to make your own decision up, right? You think, well, it's a little bit busy, I'm taking me money, I'll just plod along, right? It's up to you, up to you. But stop moaning and whinging about it, that, you know, oh, look at all these Ubers picking up, yeah, I've got legal cover. Stop whinging and do something, yeah? Join the trade group that actively wants to fight TFL, yeah? Because you and your family have had this job for years. It's what's put your kids through uni, probably what bought you your house, yeah? Giving you the ability to go and work hard. Now, they're trying to suppress that, trying to stop that, yeah? And Listen, the trade's at a big crossroads, and if you want to keep your head in the sand and just tick along and just carry on, then good luck to you, yeah? I hope you'll be very happy and it all works out for you. But we're in a fight for our own survival. That's why it's imperative that we all get behind United Trade Action Group and we go to court and try and get all this resolved, yeah? We've got to do it. The Steve Mack thing, TFL, not, well, he don't, does he? He's the... I'll say one word, right? Gatekeeper. That's all I'm saying. And I don't want to get into a slanging match with anyone, but, you know, you look at the liberties that TFL have taken over the years with this trade, right? And as I've said, I was at a meeting at Woodfield Road and I said to Steve McNamara, Steve, how come you never ever have a go at TFL in the paper? Am I living on some parallel taxi universe, right, where everything's lovely? I know I'll get Marx's vouchers, but is everything that great that, you know, that they've not done anything wrong? And Steve Mack's words to me was that I don't see any value in it. You know, I don't see any value in having a go at TFL. Unreal, innit? Hey-o.
The Mick the Brit Podcast.
First you take on the heart and the palm of your hand and squeeze it. Then you take my mind and play with it all night. You take my pride and you throw it up against the wall. You take me in your arms, baby, and bounce me like a football. Well, I'm not complaining what you're doing, you see.
Susan Cadogan and Hurt So Good.
Anyway, will the worshipful company of Hackney carriage drivers or the worshipful company of hypocritical cab drivers be at the Lord Mayor's show on Saturday? I assume they will. I assume they will. It's appalling because their attendance at it is sending the signal to the Corporation of London that not only are we not going to do anything about the Bank Junction and the restricted access to Moor Lane, which will grow and grow and grow right across the city, okay, we're actually endorsing it. Yeah, that's fine. But also, what we've got to think about, all the trade orgs have got to think about this, we've got to target the politicians, the mayor's question times, whenever these local, you know, the London Tories or the London Conservatives, Labour, Lib Dems meet, that's where we've got to be. We've got to be right in their face about these things. When the Corporation of London meet at the Guildhall, we need to be there, OK? You know, blocking up the roads just for tourists, I'm not sure is that effective, because half the time they don't know what's going on. I think we've got to target the politicians, because it's the politicians that make the decisions. Well, I'm not sure it's the parable of the prodigal son, but I think the pen is starting to drop with even those of the most open-minded nature. I won't use the word gullible, OK? That the LTDA and McNamara and... It isn't, well, yeah, Steve McNamara heads the organisation up, but as far as I'm concerned, he's just carrying on Oddie's agenda and Massett's agenda, OK? And as Davis says, gatekeeper is one word you could use for it. I would use stronger words, but it doesn't really matter. What's clear now is that everybody has realised, much too late in the day, of course, but there you are. Better late than never, that there is no way that the LTDA exists for the best interests of the cab trade. They exist for the best interests of the Council of Management, of which only one or two drive a cab meaningfully. It's a sham.
The Mick the Brit Podcast.
Badly Drawn Boy and Something to Talk About.
Anyway, back to Mr. McNamara and his comment about other people supporting the LTDA's view about Chris Johnson. I've had it from the horse's mouth that the RMT never commented on that at all. And on another busy news night, we've had a communication come in from someone from the Met Police about Lisson Grove and the robberies. What's clear to them, they understand, they're fully cognizant that there's a big problem, but what they're saying is, please just don't put it on Twitter that you were turned over. Do report it to them, because they can't say to their governor that there's a crime wave unless there's enough reported crime. So don't just swallow it and just moan about it. You've got to report it to the police so that they can say to their governor, we need to put some resources down there. You know what I mean? So, I suppose the answer is help us, help them, help us.
That's them trying to wiggle out of it, though, Paul. What's happened? Tony Casey went down to the gangs and robbery squad at Charing Cross Police Station and spoke to, I can't think of his name now, Neil, I think it was Neil Reynolds or something like that, and Chief Inspector. And apparently, most of these muggins, when they've been reported to the police, they've been put in the wrong category as thefts from motor vehicles. Not muggins or violent crimes or attempted robberies, thefts from motor vehicles, which is like a non-priority status. They couldn't even find a report of Georgie Vice being mugged and hospitalised. It's absolute bollocks, you know, that all these things are being put in the wrong category. Do you remember back in 2009 when the sexual assaults in minicabs went through the roof, and a chief inspector at Tower Bridge Police Station, who was handling all these rapes, was recategorising sexual assaults as assaults on the person, like GBH. So it was taken out of the sexual assaults. And within 6 months, the sexual assault figures went down dramatically by 75% or something like that. And when it was found out, the chief inspector got the sack, actually. I think he got slung out of the police over it. But it just shows you what they do to cover up these crime figures. They're worse than, well, you know, I can't say on here, but there you go.
I hear what you say there, and it's very depressing, isn't it? What have we come to as a country? Where honest working people just trying to get a living, not out to rob anybody or punch anybody or whatever, isn't protected, right, by the state. Well, it's worse than that. They're not protected by the state. They're actively attacked by the state. But on this matter, I suppose we've got to trust whoever it is, mate. I don't know who this bloke was. He's probably the local sergeant or whatever. He's probably acting in good faith. But as you know, with these things, the further you move up the ladder, the less and less they give a fuck about what happens to the people on the street.
The end of that sentence, Paul, is the more and more they care about their pension.
I remember the legal system in this country was held up in very high regard. But since Arbuthnot, it's come crashing down, certainly in my opinion, anyway.
Well, in closing, not directly CAD-related, but today's the second anniversary of the terrible tram crash in Croydon. It's also, they brought out, after the report, there was about 20 recommendations of safety things that TfL needed to do. How many of them they've done? Probably less than half. So, once again, their commitment to it's all about public safety is looking a bit thin. Also, their commitment to spending money wisely is looking a bit thin, as the National Audit Office are going to be looking into the Crossrail overspend. And onside Mike keeps on saying, well, it's all to do with Crossrail Limited. It's nothing to do with us. The problem is, onside, Mike, is that Crossrail Limited is a wholly owned subsidiary of TFL. And guess who runs that, or who is paid to run it, to be more accurately? No, nothing but nothing, nobody else but your good old self, Mike. And also, Heidi Alexander, remember her, the Deputy Mayor for Transport, failed MP, all right, OK? She's had a pop at the GLA and anyone else who's criticised TFL and talked about Crossrail. Well, she's going to have to eat humble pie too. So I think, and you've heard it here first, that by the new year, onside Mike will be out on his backside and Heidi High will become Heidi Bye.
Well, that's it. There is no more. Thank you for listening so far to the broadcast here. Yes, not our usual fare. A bit somber. Not firing on both barrels like we usually do. So thanks once again for listening. We're back again next week, round about the same time. There was no 20, 30, 40, let's see, number ones from 20, 30 and 40 years ago because they are exactly the same as last week, which would be Cher, Enya, and that's right, John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John with Summer Nights. And also the number one album 40 years ago was, yes, the soundtrack to Grease. Anyway, thanks once again for listening, and we're back with you same time next week. Till then, ta-da.
Good night and good luck to you all.